This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
All right, if you're a Christian, do you feel discrimination is coming against the church, against Christians? Do you feel marginalized? You're watching a television program. Do you feel like the Christian is the butt of the joke? Or if you're watching the news, the Christian is the suspect? Now, the Constitution says there'll be no religious test for office. But Senator Sanders, Senator Feinstein, Senator Durbin, they have begun a secular inquisition. And it's very important that we follow this and understand what's really happening. We're going to talk about that towards the end of the program. But this is not Tony Perkins. You're listening to Jerry Johnson. I'm president of NRB, National Religious Broadcasters. And we're so happy that FRC and Washington Watch are part of the NRB family. And it's a joy to be with you today. But the big news right now, we're going to talk about this for a while, and I want you to call in. The big news is President Trump. He's commander-in-chief, and he's at the UN, and he's saying that Rocket Man Kim Jong-un of North Korea is on a suicide mission, and he's saying if they threaten us, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. So we've been thinking about this for a day. We want you to call in and react to this language, because what's happening, he's getting mixed reviews. You know, the New York Times said, warmonger. Vanity Fair says this is a maniacal UN soliloquy. The Baltimore Sun said, who's the madman, Kim or Trump? Well, what do you think? The number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And the reason this is so important is the Constitution says that the president is the commander-in-chief. The Constitution really says that the purpose of the U.S. government is to provide for national security. This is the function a federal government is, to protect the states together. It's one of the main functions of the government. I know today politicians want to talk about education and the parks and the environment and health care. None of that, and I mean none of it, is in the Constitution. But the one thing that is explicitly in the Constitution is the national defense. So is Trump properly doing this, or is he maniacal? Is he a warmonger? Is he a madman? What do you think? You know, Eric Erickson, who was no friend of Trump as a conservative activist, actually praised Trump and said he's not mincing words. Franklin Graham said, quote, thank God we have a president who is not afraid to speak the truth to the whole world. And Mitt Romney tweeted out, President Trump gave a strong and needed challenge to UN members to live up to its charter and to confront global challenges. What do you think? The number is 866-372-7234. Do you agree with Hillary Clinton? She said Trump's speech was, quote, too dark, too dark. What do you think? Well, let's just listen to some of this speech. And again, I want you to call. I want you to react. You think President Trump is just right or too tough here? So he wanted to talk a good bit about Iran. Now, if you know, we've got this deal with Iran that was brokered under President Obama, which allows Iran really to continue pursuing nuclear ambitions. And there's a problem with this deal. So here, listen carefully to President Trump on the bad deal.
We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program.
They're applauding.
The Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it. Believe me.
Okay. He said, believe me. And it's breaking news in the last 2 hours. Fox News is reporting this, that in a meeting with some Palestinian leaders, President Trump said today he's already made up his mind about the Iranian deal, but he's not telling us yet what his decision is. But I just have to believe if he said something like that, and actually, just listening to those words in the speech, I have to believe he is going to pull the United States out of this deal with Iran. And we'll talk about why he might want to do that in a minute. But we've got some callers on the line. Karen is on the line. Karen, thank you for calling from South Carolina. What's your view?
I'm proud. I'm proud that we have a president that will speak the truth, and I'm proud to be an American, and it gives me some comfort.
Well, look, I mean, this is similar to what John Bolton said, you know, Karen. He said, you know, this is the best speech of the Trump presidency. People have been wanting a boldness. They've been wanting some leadership. They've been wanting someone who would stand up for American interest. Karen, thank you for calling. We've got Linda on the line from Missouri. Linda, what do you think of this speech at the UN?
Been wanting someone who would stand up for American interest. Karen, thank you for calling. We've got Linda on the line from Missouri.
Hello?
What do you think of this speech at the UN?
Linda, I think you've got your radio on. You might want to turn that down if you're going to talk to us on the phone.
Why I'm calling is this, because they put him down when he's trying to do the best we can right now. Look at this world. It's all in a mess. And
yes.
Look what Hillary did. Look what Obama did. We griped because they were there. I mean, look what Hillary did to Benghazi. Look at that.
Yes.
And Trump is trying to do his best. And I voted for him, and I'll do it again.
All right, Linda, thank you for calling. He did inherit a mess. He inherited a real mess in Iraq. I think President Bush left it in a much better situation after his 8 years than President Obama did in his 8 years, just talking about Iraq. But forget Iraq for a moment. Let's talk about Syria. I mean, President Trump inherited a world on fire from President Obama. Think about North Korea. Think about Iran. So you're right. It's one thing to spin plates and to start one at a time, but, you know, to walk into the room and take all of the plates all at once, it's essentially what President Trump has had to do. But he doesn't like this Iran deal, and neither does Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. Here's Netanyahu.
Israel's policy regarding the nuclear deal with Iran is very simple. Change it or cancel it. Fix it or nix it.
Nix it, he said. Okay, well, that's straightforward. So he's in total agreement with President Trump. We want to know what you think. The number is 866-372-7234. What's so bad about the Iran deal? We're going to talk about that in a minute, but I just want some reaction to this news, this speech. I want to hear what Americans are thinking. Kathy is on the line from Alabama. Kathy, what do you think?
Yes, I stand for President Trump, and I stand with him in that he's trying to put the American people first. He's trying to do right by us as a nation. And I am thankful to God that we have a president that is willing to stand up for us finally.
Well, there it is. I mean, right now, I guess the score is 3-4-0. I mean, folks seem to be for the president's tone and the substance at the U.N., We want to know what you think. The number is 866-372-34, 372-7234. And he didn't just talk about Iran. He talked about Islamic terrorism. And a lot of people, you know, have been critical of previous administrations for not using the term Islamic terrorism. President Trump did it in the campaign. He's not always done it. Some of his subordinates have not always done it, even in the last few months. But he came back to that when it really counted in front of the UN. You cannot imagine the pressure not to say this at the UN, but let's listen to President Trump say Islamic terrorism.
We will stop radical Islamic terrorism because we cannot allow it to tear up our nation and indeed to tear up the entire world.
Well, there it is. He names it radical Islamic terrorism. Well, the previous president wouldn't even say those three words. He just wouldn't do it. Sherry, thank you for calling. Sherry is from West Virginia. What's your view?
I feel President Trump did inherit a hornet's nest, and he is doing the best he can. I would vote for him again. What would Hillary do if she was in? Send him some more plutonium to keep on going in Korea?
Well, I don't know what she would do, but she was part of the administration, not just part of it. She was running the State Department, and this State Department handed this next administration an absolute mess with Syria, with messing up the victory of the Iraq War, handing nuclear weapons essentially to Kim and North Korea. So we know what she would do. She did it. And
well,
that's why I think America.
I watch Fox News all the time, and they're telling us all about the fake news stuff, and it is. They show it on there. What do?
Well, thank you for calling, Sherry. Thank you for your opinion. Folks, we want to know what you're thinking about President Trump's speech, what he had to say about North Korea, what he had to say about Iran, Islam, terrorism, and actually what he had to say about American interest, nationalism, what he had to say about socialism and communism. The number is 866-372-7234. We've got Walter on the line from Memphis, Tennessee. Walter, what's your view?
Hey, yeah, I just want to say that I've agreed with everything the president said, and I think that he's the gutsiest president we've had since Reagan, and I'm so grateful
yeah.
for him.
Well,
I would vote for him again.
That's a strong word, Walter.
If only he would be gutsy with the Senate and the House of Representatives, I'd be happier.
Well, they need to be pushed, not just cajoled and encouraged. There is a role of the president to use the bully pulpit, and you're exactly right. He does need to work hard up here on Capitol Hill. We've got Evan on the line from Mississippi. One more caller here before the break. Evan, what do you think about President Trump and his tone at the United Nations?
Hey, brother. I thought that the tone was just a breath of fresh air. I actually wanted to ask you a question, see what your opinion on something was. With this whole North Korea fiasco, I'm of the opinion that, you know, Trump should just go in and just take Kim Jong-un out and just kind of liberate the people. I remember, you know, when Kim Jong-il died, a lot of people were crying in the streets and almost worshipped him. You know, like they worshipped him like a god. And so I wanted to kind of ask, what do you think that the repercussions for going into North Korea would be? Because there's millions and millions of people that have never seen freedom before. And I wanted to see what you thought about that.
All right. So that's Evan asking about North Korea. What would happen if President Trump did try to take out or did take out President Kim of North Korea? Well, to hear the answer to that question, you're going to have to join us after the break. We're going to talk about possible North Korean scenarios. We've still got Calvin and Beth and Michelle on the line. I hope you don't go off. We're going to come back. We'll take your questions. The number is 866-372-7234. We're going to talk about President Trump in Iran. Why is the deal so bad? We're going to look under the hood, talk about that deal. Terrorism, Americanism, socialism, communism. This isn't Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. I'm Jerry Johnson from NRB, filling in for Tony Perkins. We'll be right back to take your questions and calls.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more. In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
The United States and our allies are working together throughout the Middle East to crush the loser terrorists and stop the reemergence of safe havens they use to launch attacks on all of our people.
Okay, that's President Trump at the United Nations. He's going big, he's going bold, he's playing rough, he's playing hardball. We're talking about it. Is it the right tone? Is it the right message for this sort of diplomatic context up there in New York City? The number is 866-372-7234. We're taking your calls. It's Jerry Johnson from NRB sitting in for Tony Perkins. We've got callers on the line, and we're about to go to those callers, but I do want to answer the question I was asked before the break, and that is, you know, should President Trump take out Kim in North Korea, or what would happen if he did? And, you know, it's a very difficult question. It's the kind of a question that really only the president can answer because he has a lot of facts that we don't have and a lot of intelligence that we don't have about what's really going on. Here's what we do know, though. And that is that the president of North Korea has threatened the United States verbally, specifically, repeatedly. He has said that he's going to attack us. He's going to knock us out. I think that's important. We've got to take that seriously. Two, he has the weapons. You know, the kinds of weapons we thought Saddam Hussein had, we know that he has. We have been able to measure these nuclear explosions that he's done underground, these tests. We know he has atom bombs, maybe even now a hydrogen bomb. We don't know that, but we know he has some nuclear capacity. Third, we know he has the means of delivery, or he's developing it. We've watched these videos. They've been showing the videos to us. Again, this is not like the hidden programs that Saddam Hussein, whether we thought he had or he was working on. We know he has these programs. We measure them. We see them, and we see and hear the threats. But obviously, the president needs to be very careful about this. I mean, as to assassination, you know, there's actually a law against sort of secret assassination, going back to the old church committee and so forth. This is really not permitted to sort of secretly assassinate, but it's an act of war to take out command and control or to take out the headquarters. I mean, that's probably how you would do that if you were trying to remove the government as an act of war. But the real challenge is, and I've been there, I've been to the DMZ, I've been there in the last year, and they have got loads of old artillery pointing down to Seoul, South Korea, our allies, and just hundreds and hundreds and thousands of these artillery shells would probably be coming in to South Korea. So I trust General Mattis when he said he has a plan, a secret plan. He has options. And I think, you know, there are ways that we could do this, and if we have to do it. But, you know, that's a decision only the president can make. He has all of those facts. Well, we've got callers on the line. We want to know what you think about the president's tone, what he said about Iraq and terrorism and nationalism and communism at the UN. Is he being too tough, or is it just right? Are you proud of him? Michelle is on the line from Oklahoma, been holding. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I just wanted to mention that I'm very glad to hear that he's putting the Iran deal back on the table, because as much as I hate to think about all of those North Koreans who are innocent of their leader's actions possibly being caught up in his actions, the point remains that by postponing what they did with Iran, you know, postponing putting all I don't remember all the logistics behind it, but postponing basically the sanctions or something like that and allowing them to continue their nuclear program, I thought was like one of the stupidest things the president of the United States could have ever done. I thought it was the boldest, dumb thing that a leader of our nation could do. I mean, beyond other
Well, let's talk about that, Michelle. Let's talk about that, because I really appreciate your insight, your impression, because I think it's the right impression and the right insight. If you would have heard the entire Bibi Netanyahu speech at the UN, he said, look, the reason I'm against the Iran deal is because I look at the North Korean deals that were struck earlier. That is, you know, people who think the Iran deal will keep Iran from getting nuclear weapons forget that this is the same model of a deal that's essentially made with North Korea years and years ago. And when you look under the hood of this Iran deal, it allows Iran to maintain the nuclear infrastructure that they have. It far exceeds a legitimate civilian needs. It particularly allows them to keep using uranium enrichment facilities at Natanz and Fordow. Third, it only makes them mothball some of these other facilities, these centrifuges. They don't have to destroy them. And fourth, it allows them to quickly get out and reverse. I mean, they would be leaving the agreement, but they could immediately take out the mothballs and just get this program going again. But it would take months and months and months, if not years, to put back sanctions. You were talking about, you know, it was the sanctions that were withdrawn when they signed the deal, but it would take a long time to reimpose them. There's no automatic trigger for sanctions to start back. And then, of course, people are forgetting they have a long history of violating previous nuclear agreements. So this is the real problem. And then the other thing, you'll remember, we gave them billions of dollars actually in cash, and then other money's been freed up, other trade has been freed up. And what are they doing? They're financing, that is, Iran is financing terrorism in Iraq, terrorism in Syria, terrorism in Israel. A lot of these attacks on Israel, the Palestinians and Hezbollah, these are coming from Iran. Iran is providing the weapons. Iran is providing the money. That's why the Iran deal is not a good deal. Well, that's, by the way, I summarized from the Heritage Foundation, a great article by James Phillips. I want to give him credit for those reasons why the Iran deal is a bad deal. We got callers on the line. We got time for a quick word from Calvin. Calvin, do you like what President Trump is doing and saying?
I definitely like Mr. Trump. I voted for him. I'm proud to be an American, and I'm proud that I'm going to say I'm going to vote for him again.
All right, Calvin, thanks so much for your call. Well, that pretty much says it all right there, doesn't it? Well, we may talk some more about this UN speech when we come back. We've got another caller on the line, and I'm going to try to get to Beth when we come back. But after that, we're going to talk about the persecution of Christians in the public sphere. We're going to talk about religious discrimination, the new secular inquisition. The Constitution says there won't be a religious test for office, but some of the liberals want that. All right, this is Jerry Johnson, Washington Watching. We'll be right back.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
All right, folks, do you feel discrimination? Do you feel the marginalization? Do you feel that you're being pushed out of the public square as a Christian? Well, some of that's happening up here on Capitol Hill. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, but we've been talking about President Trump's speech at the UN, and we've got callers on the line. I just want you quickly to say, do you support the president, what he's saying at the UN, what he's saying as commander-in-chief? Do you support it? How do you feel? We've got Beth on the line from Illinois. Beth, what do you think?
I totally support President Trump. I think everything he is saying is the truth, and people better wake up and listen and support him. He is the best thing we've had in several years.
Thanks, Beth. I'm going quickly now to George from Missouri. George, do you support the president, what he's doing at the UN?
I voted for him. I support him, and I think he's perfectly right. And I would have told them and any country, don't bring it, don't get it.
All right, and we've got Todd on the line from Louisiana. Todd, what do you think about President Trump? What he's saying at the UN, he's talking tough. What do you think?
Yeah, that's fine. That's all fine and dandy to talk tough. But we're talking about innocent lives here, and I don't appreciate that at all. I mean, this sounds like third grade elementary. Oh, you did this to me, I'm going to do this to you. What did the United States do to North Korea that we got to go to war? What did he do? I mean, does anybody know? Why are we always going to the table to go to war? Why can't we sit around the table like grown gentlemen and talk about this? I mean, you talking
okay,
about innocent
Todd.
People get killed?
All right, let me answer that as quickly as I can before we move to the next segment. There was a war between North and South Korea many, many years ago, and there was a truce. And that truce was conditioned upon certain things. And in any case, the North has not held to the treaty, but right now the North is threatening the South and threatening us with nuclear weapons. They are saying that they're going to attack us with nuclear weapons, and they're building them. So that's the reason. But you're right. Innocent lives are in the balance, and it's very important to talk it out. It's very important to show some wisdom and patience and understanding, and let's hope and pray the president's doing that. But as president, his job is to protect us, and he's got to be ready to do it and to talk like he's going to do it. And I think that's why most of the callers today feel he's got the right tone, he's got the right message. Well, we're going to shift gears right now and talk about a new inquisition. I call it a secular inquisition. We've had some Senate confirmation hearings up here on Capitol Hill, and President Trump has nominated some people to serve, and it's been quite a revelation to see how some of the liberal Democrat senators treat some of these candidates. And what I want to do is play a couple of clips from a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing to consider the nomination of Amy Barrett. Now, this was for the Court of Appeals. She's a Catholic law professor at Notre Dame. She was a clerk for Justice Scalia. She was harshly questioned by Dianne Feinstein. Here it is.
Dogma and law are two different things. And I think whatever a religion is, it has its own dogma. The law is totally different. And I think in your case, Professor, when you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country.
All right, that's enough of that. We're going to pause and not do any other clips just now because that's about all I can take. I'm going to bring on the expert to talk about this, and that is Travis Weber right here at FRC, Family Research Council's Center for Religious Liberty. Travis, thank you for joining us. What's your reaction to that sound and what's going on up there at the Senate?
Yeah, I mean, this is just completely unacceptable. Senator Feinstein is singling out Amy Barrett because of her religious beliefs. I mean, she said she's doing that. You know, and the article that Amy Barrett wrote that Feinstein claims to rely on as a cause for concern actually should be setting her at ease. In that article, Barrett wrote that when a Catholic person in a position of public trust in a judgeship has a conflict between faith and law, they should recuse themselves. That means take themselves out of the equation, not make a decision, and because to protect themselves from putting their faith over the law. So that's what the article said. If Feinstein and her people had read that, they should be pleased with Barrett. Yet they're going after her because of the article. It makes no sense, and it's just ridiculous.
Well, let me ask the question another way. You wrote a piece called "Can a Christian Serve as a Judge Anymore?" What's your answer to that? We've only got a minute.
The question is perhaps not. If people like Feinstein continue to get their way, this is why we need to push back against.
Yeah, Travis, I think we lost you there somehow. I'm sorry, but you're right. If Feinstein is right, if Durbin is right, are you on?
I'm here.
Oh. Well, look, hang on. We'll come back after the break. I want you to finish that argument, and we're going to listen to more of Feinstein, more of Durbin, because this is a serious issue, folks, and we want you to call in. I'm going to give the number out. You can join us, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Do you think conservative Christians should be eligible for public service? Let's talk about it.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org. Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Do you consider yourself an Orthodox Catholic?
All right. Are you now? Or have you ever been a Christian? Not a communist. That used to be the old question. People thought that was inappropriate to ask if someone was or had been a communist. Actually, it was not inappropriate. That was a good question at the time. But people think it was an outrage. But now they think it's appropriate. The same people think it's appropriate to ask people if they're Orthodox, if they're Christian, if they're Catholic, and then they go at them for their beliefs, to disqualify them for political appointments, for judgeships, for administrative posts. And that was Senator Richard Durbin, along with Senator Feinstein, going after Amy Barrett, who had been nominated for a circuit court. With me to talk about this trend is Travis Weber of the Family Research Council. Travis, we got cut off a little bit in that last segment. Finish your thought. What do you think about all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just absolutely ridiculous. If people like Senator Feinstein and Durbin get their way, we could reach a point at which a Christian adhering to historic Christianity is excluded from public service on the basis of their beliefs. These people being questioned, Amy Barrett, Russell Vaught, if we think back earlier this year, and others, they're not being questioned on the basis of anything problematic, anything they've done in past public service. They're being questioned solely because of what they believe. It goes against everything this country was founded for, and it must be called out and challenged when we see it happening.
All right, Travis, I agree with you. We've got some callers on the line. If you want to stay on with us, we'll react to these. We've got Arthur on the line from Virginia. Arthur, what are you thinking about this?
Hi. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on in that exact scenario, but in an overall scope, I'm a college student, and I kind of see it on the lower levels just, you know, in the world. And I see, like, the left, you know, if you do say you're a Christian or something like that, you really don't, at that point, you no longer have any credibility. They won't even listen to you because you're seen as someone who essentially believes in a myth. And so why would you have anything factual to say?
And can you tell us, Arthur, what college, what university you're attending?
Right. So I go to Nova, community
I know
college
that.
In Manassas.
Yeah. Yes.
But I think the
I used to live in Manassas, so I know it.
Yeah, it's a nice little city.
Yeah. Well, look, Arthur, we'll pick up your call there, and I'm going to ask Travis to respond to this, because it's not just about the Senate. I mean, this is about federal offices. This is about the military, and this is about government institutions. It's about public schools. It's about middle schools, high schools, junior colleges, universities, and it's essentially, you know, for any government office, official, platform, or setting, Christians need not apply. What do you think, Travis?
Well, yeah, I mean, that does seem to be the trend, you know, and I think we need to conduct ourselves with wholehearted service in the public square as Christians. You know, we're called to work hard for the Lord and be faithful to our beliefs, but at the same time, we set a good example of our work ethic, you know, and this sort of ties in with the caller's point, which is almost sounded like more of an apologetics point. You know, people not believing the historic truth of Christianity. I think for what he was referencing, what we have to continue to do is challenge people. Do you believe Jesus existed? If he did, who was he? Was he God or was he merely a man? And, you know, that's sort of, you know, a separate area of what we're talking about, but there are good resources out there. And this is something as believers we have to continue to do.
Yeah, so the answer is not to cower, and it's not to be quiet, but actually to assert our space, our turf on the public square and say yes. And while we're at it, we're at a public institution or we're at a college or a university. And so, yes, 2,000 years ago, there are records, there are documents, there is the New Testament record. Let's talk about that. And you're right, there are a lot of good books and films made about the veracity of the New Testament, the reliability of the New Testament, the resurrection accounts, and so forth. All of that would be appropriate. But is it appropriate for a Christian to be a judge, a known Christian to be a judge? So, folks, I want you to listen. You say, what are y'all talking about? Well, put yourself up in the Senate, and we have here now Bernie Sanders, who was questioning a candidate named Vought, and Vought was vote. He was nominated for OMB. This is the Office of Management and Budget. That's not even a judge, but listen to how Bernie Sanders treated this candidate.
You wrote, Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned. End of quote. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation. And
again, I apologize. Forgive me. We just don't have a lot of time. Do you believe that people in the Muslim religion stand condemned? Is that your view?
Again, Senator, I'm a Christian, and I wrote that piece.
Well, what does that say?
The statement of faith of Wheaton.
I understand that. I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world. In your judgment, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned?
All right, folks, that was Senator Bernie Sanders grilling a candidate for the Office of Management and Budget for something he had written. And obviously it had to do with the statement of faith for Wheaton. It's very typical boilerplate kind of an issue for Christian colleges and universities. Travis from Family Research Council, your final thoughts on this subject?
Yeah, I mean, this one, you know, I still honestly can't figure out where Sanders is coming from. And I wrote about it at the time. Either he is horribly ignorant of what Christians believe, or he's trying to score some cheap points by confusing people on a theological issue by making them think that the nominee said something as a matter of public policy. I mean, this was a blog post written on a theological dispute regarding a Christian university. It had nothing to do with anything the nominee did in past policy or anything regarding his treatment of non-Christians. Sanders has to know this. He's going after him for it. You know, either one, intentionally trying to confuse people and misrepresent, or two, he's just ignorant of what Christians believe. And this is really a call to re-education of the public on what we believe about tolerance in civil society as a matter of civil government, as preserved distinct from our religious beliefs, which do contain concern matters of reality for eternity, which do draw hard distinctions, which Sanders didn't seem to like. So I think this one is something we have to, as Christians in this country, have to realize people just are ignorant, or they may not understand, or they may be trying to misrepresent, but we need to monitor these things and not let them pass unchallenged for sure.
Well, I'm glad you're monitoring it at the FRC. This is Travis Weber we're hearing now, and he's the religious liberty expert here at Family Research Council. That's FRC.org, I believe, if you want to look at some of his material. Travis, thank you for joining us today. And I'm going to take some of the other callers just for a moment. People are on the line here. We got David from Tennessee. David, what's your view on this story?
How are you, sir? My view is that these are godless people, and we have got to do all we can to remove them from office. I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Help, but there's a great scene in there where Maybelle tells Miss Hilly, "You're a godless woman, Miss Hilly. Ain't you tired? Ain't you tired?"
Well, David, that is true. A lot of these folks are secular, and that means they are atheist or agnostic or maybe godless. But they're also constitutionless, because the Constitution says there'll be no religious test for office. So the point is, they don't really understand the role of the federal government or the U.S. Constitution, and they ought to if they're serving in the U.S. Senate. We've got John on the line from Mississippi. John, what's your reaction to this trend?
Hi, good afternoon, Jerry. Thank you for taking my call.
What do you think about this?
I think it's a very horrible trend. I believe anyone should be able to serve in a civic or elected duty. There's a set of criteria and bylaws that govern how someone should act and behave and the qualifications to get that job. And as far as I know, I have not seen where Christianity is an automatic disqualifier. Although they act like it is, those are the ones that are being discriminatory toward the candidate.
Mm. I'll tell you, we've got another caller on the line. Thank you, John. But let's go to Don, because he's got another angle on this. It's about where you work. It's about employment. Don, what's your insight on this?
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. The whole basis of their question is illegal from just a basic HR point of view. I interview people all the time, and you can't even ask somebody or even remotely sniff around what religion are they, or you could be brought up in suits for discrimination.
Yeah, so if they were going to work for Starbucks, they couldn't ask this question. If they were going to work at Target or Walmart, they couldn't ask such a question. It's a shame.
Absolutely not. I mean, yeah, the EEOC committee should be bringing them up on charges.
Well, the sad fact is there are a lot of things that are illegal in the rest of America, but the Senate or the Congress do them all the time. They are a law unto themselves, and that's just the way they think. I mean, they could not do that as an employer. I think it's a fascinating insight that you bring there. Let's go now to Mark from Mississippi. Mark, what's your reaction to this trend?
Well, I think John took my thunder, but he's thinking just what I am. I mean, we have taken, you can't ask the question in military anymore. What your gender or whatever your preference is. They voted for that. We've taken that out of all questionnaires as far as jobs. I think it's very hypocritical to now ask a politician to stand up and say, "What is your religion?" I think that is just awful.
Well, you know, the Babylon Bee put it this way. That's a little bit of satire here. That's what they do. Here's the headline. It's perfectly okay for public servants to be Christians, as long as they don't believe Christian things. That's the idea that, well, you could be a Christian, but you can't really believe Christian things. And obviously, if Durbin, if Feinstein, if Sanders had even a basic understanding of not just Christianity, but Judaism, of Catholicism, they would know that any candidate coming from these faith traditions would have some doctrine or some dogma, a creed, a statement of faith. People call it different things, and that's just automatic. But they're from the culture of liberalism, where you can sort of claim a tradition but not really believe it or take it seriously. That's the way they are Jews. They are Catholics, or they are Christians. They're in some sort of a mainline. You know, the label is there, but you open the can up, and it's absolutely empty. There's nothing in the can of their Judaism, their Christianity, or their Catholicism. They just don't believe it. So they wouldn't expect anybody else to believe it. And they're outraged if somebody wants to work in government and believe what their religion actually says they ought to believe. All right, folks, we've been talking about two issues today, and I want to go from the news to the good news. Sometimes the news is bad, so I think it is appropriate to go from the news to the good news. And let's pull all of this into the Bible. Let's pull all of this into Scripture. And it's interesting because we're talking about office, public service, government service, and we're talking about the president. Well, there's no higher public servant role of public service than the presidency of the United States. And what is the role of the public official? Well, the Bible is very clear. It is in Romans 13 is the Christian understanding of what government service is about. And it's something God provides to mitigate sin or to control sin or to limit the impact of sin. So when you think about how evil people can be, we had a caller that was concerned about the taking of innocent human life. When you think about the murderers that are out there, the madmen that are out there, so we're told in Romans 13 that the government leader, the government official, is a minister of the sword. He's a minister of the sword. That's army, deadly force, or even execution. But that is, government is about using deadly force to protect us from the evildoers, from those who are so warped and fallen in their sin that they would take human life. And the job of the government leader is to use deadly force against that. Now, there's another remedy for sin that has to do with the spirit and the soul, and that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the job of the church. And our message is this. There's guilt that comes with sin, and punishment that comes with sin, but Jesus died on the cross and rose again to pay for our sins so that we could be free. You believe in Jesus, you look to Jesus, you trust Jesus, you take Jesus as your Lord and Savior, and that's the solution, that's the antidote for the guilt of sin. Government is the solution to the evil of sin and the harm of sin. This is Jerry Johnson for Washington Watch. We'll be back tomorrow, actually.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.